Welcome to Publishing Cousins, where family meets the fascinating world of books. I'm Melissa Lesher, the author.
And I'm Nikki Becker, the illustrator.
We are partners in publishing.
Ever wonder what really happens behind the scenes in publishing? Well, you're in the right place. Every episode, we'll be pulling back the curtain on this wild and wonderful industry, sharing our own creative adventures, and dishing out hard-earned wisdom about writing and illustrating for publication.
From manuscript mayhem to deadline drama, from sketch submissions to final flourishes, we're bringing you the real deal, served with the hefty side of cousin banter and plenty of laughs. Whether you're dreaming of seeing your own work in print or you're just a book lover curious about how the magic happens, we've got something special for you.
So grab your favorite beverage, settle into your comfy chair, and join us for an insider's journey through the world of publishing. We're the Publishing Cousins, and we can't wait to share our stories with you.
Welcome back, everyone, to another Publishing Cousins podcast episode. And today we're going to dive into failures and what we've learned from them. It's a great topic, right, Nikki?
It's fantastic because there are so many.
We're not going to tell you all our failures today, though, right? I mean, we're just going to give them a few.
Yeah, this topic could be a whole season, honestly.
It's just a fact of life, right? But don't you feel like you learn from more from your failures than your successes sometimes?
Absolutely. And you cannot grow, you cannot evolve, you cannot get better at what you're doing, whether it's writing, illustrating, it doesn't matter what you're doing. You cannot become better at that thing unless you have failures. That's part of the learning process.
Oh, yes. Yes. Okay. So I think in the last episode, I kind of really shared my big failure, which I don't have that book sitting in front of me, but you could see the poster back here on the wall. That is my big failure. And there were a lot of little failures within that. And I will one day go back and rewrite that story, I promise, because I have kids at school begging for a sequel. Kids don't notice all the failure parts. They have a lot more grace. I'll tell you that, but
that also proves that what you consider a failure was still a success.
True, to some degree, yes. Yeah,
we are our own worst critics.
Yes, this is true. So I'm going to say, from the author's standpoint, launching a book with zero platform, huge failure. Like, people aren't going to buy your book when they don't know you at all and they don't know your writing at all. So I know this makes a lot of authors nervous about, like, I got to start my website. I need to start a newsletter list. But the earlier you start it, the better. Couple things. The sooner your website's up, and it can literally be a holding page. It just has your picture, your name, and a little bit about you, right? And what you write. The longer your website is up, the more Google recognizes it as a valid website. And I'm not sure I'm really saying the technical terms right there. But then when you start actually putting more content out on it, you're going to start ranking more. Mm-hmm. And so the sooner you even just, like, let the page sit there. And then it's another way to just start building either a newsletter list or your social media. It depends on which outlet you want to use to build your platform to. I started out with both. I'm down to really just my newsletter. Yes, my Facebook page and Instagram stuff's out there, but I haven't posted in months. To be honest, it gives me anxiety and I don't enjoy it. So so everybody's just a little different, but that's two things I learned. And I think last episode I talked a lot about going out and getting actual training. And I always send everyone to Author Media, where Thomas Umstead Jr. hosts tons of amazing courses, and he has a free course on how to create your own author website. Oh. He walks you step by step, what needs to be on there, how it should be laid out, all that good stuff. So there's one of my failures for the day.
Wow. Well, that, I mean, yeah, I agree with you 100% on all that. It's even more website presence is even more valuable for an illustrator because you are visually seeing the work. So yes, I agree with that 100%, and even more so for the illustration side of publishing. So my big failure was in the beginning was leaving art school. I had no idea what medium I wanted to work in. And so I spent way too much time exploring mediums. I experimented too much. I played too much. And some artists would disagree. They love the experimentation process. And I do now. But then I should have been learning. I should have been putting more time into the education, follow-up education of being out of school and doodling more and sketching more. But I was too hyper-focused on a finished style. And honestly, I got nowhere with that, because what I'm doing today, none of that is incorporated whatsoever, what I was doing. I even went as far as sewing, taking fabric pieces and sewing illustrations. Why? I hate sewing. Why would I want to do that? Why would I ever want to do that? And then today, I mean, things have changed slightly with digital. Digital is far easier to do than it was then. That is one of my big failures, is wasting too much precious time on the wrong medium and the wrong style. And really, I've learned that a lot in the last year. Like, and I wish somebody would have told me 15, 18 years ago that, hey, just sit down with a pencil and a piece of paper and just start drawing what is going to naturally flow from your hand to your pencil. That is your style. And you know, that has been a reawakening to me, because that imposter syndrome is real with everybody and with lots of things that we do. And you're so busy looking at what else is out there, you know, when you walk down, whether it's an aisle in Walmart, the book aisle in Walmart, or if you walk into Barnes and Noble, you see what's on the shelves and you're oogling and awing and going, oh, look at that, look at that, look at that. And you're taking all that in. It's overstimulation. And then, so when you get back to your desk and you do sit down to doodle to see what comes out naturally, all those visions of what you just saw the shelf is in your head. And then it can just mess up and make you hate sketching. I struggled with that for a long time too, because it was like, oh, I don't like what's coming out. It doesn't look like this. It doesn't look like that. And the minute I let go of that, it has changed. So, I mean, there's so many failures out there that an author or an illustrator could have. We could go farther into career, you know, choosing an agent. I had success and failures with that. I had, you know, working in self-publishing. How many failures can there be within that? For the illustrator, it's more about, you know, choosing those projects or how they come to you and knowing what's, you know, if that person's actually going to pay you or not, or if it's going to be a good fit for your style, because there's not an art director choosing that, you know, there's so many things that could be failures in different categories of what we do.
I would agree. There's always something in every little aspect that has to be done to get a book out that you could drop from and or have failures in. But my biggest thing for today is to really just to say, by the way, I do want to say, for imposter syndrome,
yeah,
it is so real. I just did I host coffee and books events. They're like 1 hour online events where readers can connect with authors in the historical Christian romance or the contemporary Christian suspense romance genre. Mm-hmm. So the authors come on a Google Meet and readers come on a Google Meet and we just sit and chat about books. Well, I always have hosted it, right? But now I'm actually not a published author. So when people ask questions, at first I wouldn't answer because I'm like, well, I'm not an author like these ladies, right? Like, they've published a lot more than I have. But then someone's like, you know, you could answer those questions because you are an author now. It just feels weird, doesn't it? Like, no, I'm not really. But also, you go to stores and you see everybody's illustrations. When I pick up a book and read it, I think my writing is total crap compared to this author. They write so much better than I do. I mean, I just said that to Crystal Cottle because I interviewed her. I just read her book and I'm like, I love your writing and I hope one day I can write as well as you do. And she's like, I'm sure you do, because she says, I do the same thing. She picks up a book and reads it and she goes, man, my writing stinks compared to them. So you're always going to battle that. It's just, I don't know a good way to get around that one. But I do say, it does, if you come across failures, do not stop. Just because you get knocked down, you better get back up again, because there is success on the other side. Again, like we said, you're learning from those failures.
I'm going to say something kind of harsh right now. If you are too sensitive, that when you have a little bit of failure or rejection, you're not going to hold on to this endeavor, this business, whether it's even in self-publishing. If you cannot handle rejection or critique or failures in this business, you're not going to go very far. I 100% believe that. I've seen it hundreds of times in people that I went to school with and people that have tried to do it once they've got out, because there is a lot of rejection. There is a lot of rejection in this business. For an illustrator, you know, you're talking about newsletter list, well, mailing lists, you know, you're going to send your samples off, you know, as many times as quarterly, and say you have a mailing list of 300 publishers or potential clients, you're not going to hear back from all 300. If you apply to an agent or a literary agent, you need to have multiples. Don't go, I only want to work with this one, because the odds of you getting in there are so slim. It's so hard. You're up against not just people who you know and your own personal community, as in authors and illustrators, but you're up against global in this business. So, you know, you're going to have rejection. You're going to have, you know, you're going to have those things that can be considered failure, but I guess I've been around it for so long that I don't consider those rejections failures. It just means that wasn't the right place for me. It, you know, it did me a favor kind of thing. But, you know, edits, say you write a book or you illustrate a piece and you send it off to an art director or your editor, and they write back with all of these changes, whether it's writing or illustrating, hey, I don't like this color, hey, I don't, you know, you need to change this whole chapter, you know, whatever it is. You can't be that person that says, no, I will not do that. If you're not willing to have those people help you make it better, or you're going to get upset because they want that change, like it's a judgment on you as a person, then you can't look at it that way. You've got to keep going. I hear a lot from illustrators that are relatively new in the business. Well, I don't understand why they didn't like how I drew that pose, or they didn't like the color choices, or, you know, they didn't like this or that. I mean, there's so many things. Well, because it's their job to know what sells. It's their mm-hmm. job to know that, hey, you don't put the back of a character's head facing the audience and illustrate it. You need to illustrate the face, turn the character around. Mm-hmm. You know, they know that dress doesn't need to be orange. It needs to be pink, because that's what the trend is, or whatever it is. I mean, there's a million things it could be. But I see a lot of people who get really, really upset when their manuscript or their portfolio gets sent and it comes back, well, if you did this, 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 and this, and this, and this, then we'll revisit it and see if it would work for us. Yeah. And they get so upset about that. And it's like, no, you need to take that as, oh, they want to look at it again. Like, you know what I mean? Fix the things that are wrong, because they're trying to help you make that marketable, so that they do buy it from you.
Right.
And you do become an author, you know, published piece. That becomes a published piece.
Yeah. It's just, you have to think of it as iron sharpening iron, right? Yeah. It That's exactly what it is. And I know we mentioned in earlier episodes that getting into a critique group really helps you with that too. So, because you're only getting a small piece, maybe one illustration or one chapter out of your book critiqued. It's not the whole thing, right? And it just kind of gets you used to getting that feedback. And I would say I used to dread getting things back from an editor because it just scared me to know like this thing that I think is amazing. It's all my ideas. And then someone's going to rip it apart. But you also need to find a good editor. A good editor doesn't just rip you apart. Yep. They give you quality feedback to say they're honest, but they give you feedback to help you learn how to improve your craft. And I will say that the two editors that I had on my, well, technically my second book, but on Unwavering Faith, they definitely took it from it being good to great. And so it's just, job. Yeah. Yeah. And so just also, like you talked about, just finding that good fit. You are going to run up against failure on that once in a while. You're going to find the wrong editor and you'll know it and you'll work around that. But, the other thing is, okay, so I said critique groups, but also just be a lifelong learner of your craft. Yep. I mean, go to conferences, read books, continuously learn, because as you said, Nikki, things change, right? Oh, maybe an orange dress was okay 10 years ago, but now pink is the new color or whatever. They know that, by the way. Your editors are very aware. They definitely have a finger on the pulse of the market for sure.
Well, the same with art directors or creative project coordinators, creative directors. There's all the titles. That's what their job is to know the markets that your project will fit into and to know if it's going to take off. And you want them to know that because it makes you successful. You know, whether that's, you know, a higher, you know, even your agent, they know that those things is what's going to make that sell. And isn't that the point? Yeah. I mean, unless you're just taking a story that you made up that you read your kids to bed and you just want to publish it for them, fine, that's great. But if you want the world to see this book and to read this book, then trust those people to make it to where it will get into those hands, because it's not going to get into those hands or that many hands if it's not put together properly to do that. That's the one thing. I mean, I don't know how it would be. I have no idea how it would be for a writer and what they learn in their education, no matter what that would be. But I know that in my education, that is one thing that you are drilled into, no matter what courses you take, is critique. Because it doesn't matter what kind of art you're creating, there's always going to be people critiquing it. It doesn't matter if it's book illustration or fine art or sculpture or fashion, or you are a landscape designer or an architect or all the facets that you could use art. If you make that a career, there's always going to be people, and you should expect every client to have a change. If you're not expecting edits out of every single client, there's something wrong there. You need to expect those edits. Now, you can disagree with those edits. So, I mean, you can do that. Now, but if you're already knee deep into a book and they come back to you and said, hey, you know, there's a dog that shows up on 8 out of the 16 spreads, whatever. We don't want that dog to be black and white. We want it to be brown and white. Make the change. I mean, is that really hurting you to make that change? You know what I mean? And honestly, that brown is going to print better than the black. You know what I mean? It's going to look nicer, and it may look nicer. It may be something you didn't see. I tear apart color a lot because I'm constantly second guess color choices based on how that's going to print. Because what you see on your computer screen or, you know, whatever medium you're working on, it may not photograph and print well, especially if you're printing United States to Europe. And depending on what you're printing, you know, you're going to post something for web and CMYK, and most of the time it's going to print in RGB, which is your colors will change in print. They will change. Reds, yeah. Yellows, oranges are terrible for that. So trust, if you've got a lot of red, yellow, or orange in your project and they come back and say, hey, will you make that more of a pink tone? There's a reason for that. And it's probably that usually comes down to printing. It could come down to trend. I mean, because that's popular right now, too.
Yeah.
That's not a failure. That's a
being open to critiques, and
that's making your work better.
Growing. Yeah, definitely. But I think that's the whole point, right? When you fail, you've got to be open to growing from it. Yep. Otherwise, you're just going to sit there in your failure. So I would say I've had lots, but the one I want to share today, it was really just, if you are going to be an author and you want this to be full time, it's not like what Nikki said, I just want this out there for a few people in my family, but you want it out there for everyone. Start today with building your author website. Get your name on a web page. And like I said, I'll put a link in the blog post for this episode where you can go to Author Media and you can see Thomas Umstead Jr.'s free author website course, and he'll walk you through it. Now, he says use WordPress for everyone. I use Squarespace, and a lot of people use Wix. WordPress is great, but if you're not high on the tech end, now he'll tell me, he'll say that I'm wrong in saying this, but he's that if you're not real techie, you can still make it work on WordPress. And I have to tell you that I followed his advice, and I consider myself pretty techie. I mean, everybody at work comes to me to help fix tech problems, right? And I'm not a tech director. I had it for 6 months, spent a good chunk of change on it, and ended up in tears because I couldn't even get like one thing posted on the website. In fact, I had this like loop issue where I couldn't even get logged in properly. And once I was in, it was a total mess. And so I ended up going to Squarespace. I think it's easy. It's so easy to build on there. But so definitely do your research on what platform you want that on, for sure, before you dive in and put money in. I just had to throw that money out the door. It was just gone. But
well, and another thing you can do on the website, if that just scares you, if it just terrifies you to think that you need to learn that, you don't have to. You can hire that out.
True.
They're probably in every small town, and every big town, but in any small town that you live in, there are marketing firms, there are IT people, those businesses in towns or not far from where you are. And you can find them online too. You can even go as far as contacting a local college who offers graphic design or web design, and see if there's any students who would like to have some work. You can get pretty decent work out of that. It gives them experience. It gives them a portfolio piece, and you'll probably pay a little less too. I used to take that stuff on, not web design, but you know, you take on projects like that as college students because A, you need the money, and B, it's experience, and it's portfolio pieces that wasn't a class assignment. So, and sometimes they could use it as a class assignment. So if you are someone that it just terrifies you to think, oh, I need to know how to make a web page, or a website. Oh, that just freaks me out. I can't do that. I can't, you don't have to, there are other avenues. And mm-hmm. I highly suggest, going to students. And I mean, there's high school students now that are learning. There's tons of high school students teaching that. So you could find maybe even someone, you know, that could help with that kind of thing. And then you pay them a fraction of what you would a marketing firm. It gives them a lot of good things, and you end up with a website. And you didn't have to learn it. So awesome. Don't be scared by that. Melissa's absolutely right. You need a web presence. There's other ways to go about doing that too. So it's not so scary.
Yes, I agree. That was great advice, Nikki. So I think what we would say is, do not run from your failures. learn from them and turn them into successes. Yeah. Do you agree?
Yes, absolutely. Because they will. You keep at it. If you just say, okay, I failed, I'm done, then you did fail.
That's true failure, right? I think I read that. That's a quote somewhere. True failure is not getting back up again.
Nope.
So get back up, guys, and keep going. Because we want to read your books or see your illustrations.
That's right. We do.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Publishing Cousins. If you enjoyed our creative conversation today, be sure to follow us wherever you get your podcast. We'd also love it if you could rate, review, and share the show. It helps other book lovers find us. You can learn more about Nikki's portfolio and Melissa's novels at publishingcousins.com. And if you have questions about writing, illustrating, or publishing that you'd like us to cover in future episodes, send them our way at literaryscape@literaryscape.com. Until next time, keep creating, and remember, in publishing, as in family, there's always room for more stories.